Gulf, which the official title is the Alabama Wind Energy Conversion Systems Act. That's a mouthful. It really developed about a year and a half ago. I became aware that there was a large wind farm project proposal for an area called Shimbone Ridge, which, by the way, my district is Senate District 10. It's Etowah and Cherokee, DeKalb, and St. Clair counties. So this ridgeline runs between Etowah and Cherokee, straddles the county line. And there was a proposal to put upwards of 50 to 60, 570-foot tall wind towers along that ridgeline. You know, I got involved literally by just hearing about it, first of all, meeting with Pioneer Green, which is the company that that wants to establish the project, and then began to kind of research the issue myself and also began to hear from quite a few constituents. The thing that concerned me as much as anything when I began to look into it was the realization that there is absolutely zero regulatory authority in the state of Alabama regarding wind farm projects. There is nothing there right now that promotes the health and safety of Alabamians or Alabama communities. There's nothing there that governs the engineering standards by which these are built. There's nothing there that puts property setbacks and noise decibel levels in place. And at the same time, these wind systems are being proposed, being heavily federally subsidized, in my opinion, to an unfair advantage over the other energy sources that have long been traditional in Alabama. So here we had a lack of protection for our citizens. At the same time, we had an alternative energy source getting a leg up on what amounts to other job-creating sources within the state. So I opened the dialogue. I met with every energy provider in the state. I met with ADEM. And over time now, I've also met with the Aviation Council, the Farmers Federation, the Business Council, the League of Municipalities, the County Commission Association, all of my local governing bodies, and legislators from around the state, and three separate wind farm developers, one of which is Pioneer Green. So it's been a matter of public hearings, massive meetings, emails, phone calls. It's been quite a robust engagement. What developed is Senate Bill 12, which is now in pursuit of passage in the House. It's already passed through the Senate after multiple amendments, and I believe it's a bill that does exactly what it's intended to do, which is basically protect our citizens and make sure that communities who see a wind farm project potentially coming to their area know that if it ever goes bust or if it ever takes an evil turn in some way, which they do in other places, that they'll be protected in the process.
Now, when you mentioned earlier, you were talking about the wind farm or the wind industry in general being subsidized. It's my understanding that there was a tax credit for wind farms that expired this past year. Am I incorrect with that?
The federal production tax credit has expired, and it typically expires. We don't know yet what's going to happen with that. What has happened over the last several years is it will expire, and then it'll be renewed in the spring and given retroactive application. So, you know, the reality is it's still going to be there, I suspect. And, you know, the truth is for the wind energy to be viable at all right now, it has to have that subsidization. It doesn't stand on its own at this current time because it's still considered an alternative source.
Do you like the idea of wind power, like as a means of controlling climate change?
I like the ability for Alabamians to be protected. I think that's first and foremost, and I'll say that over and over again in this interview, is we cannot, to the exclusion of the safety and well-being of our citizens, move forward on something that has zero regulatory authority. You know, that being said, I've said many times, and I said it from the podium in the Senate the other day, I'm all for an all-of-the-above energy policy. But at the same time, you cannot just literally say that one energy source will be given a 25% subsidization rate over the interests of the others. We have thousands of jobs in this state that relate to coal and gas and even nuclear. And wind is fine. It may not be fine in certain places in the state, but the reality is if wind works, if it's viable, it can prove its own worth, and that's part of the free market. But if it's going to be unregulated, meaning that it has free rein to do whatever it wants, then the citizens of the state are at risk at that point.
Now, a few days ago, I was able to speak with representatives of Pioneer Energy, and they were concerned when I was talking to them that the bill was an effort to sort of put a moratorium on wind energy, was their words. What would you say to that?
That's their alarmist language. If you look at the bill, you'll find that it in no way prohibits the establishment of a wind farm. In fact, what it does is it provides a uniform manner of approaching the issue statewide. Currently in Alabama, and I'm sure you're familiar, we have a thing called local legislation. There are bills that can pass just per specific county, and they still have to come through Montgomery because of the way our Constitution is set up. But right now, what the wind industry realizes is if we don't have one single unified approach to regulation for wind energy, they're going to have 67 different counties with 67 different versions in a patchwork quilt across the state of how to handle this. Currently, there's 8 counties that have proposed wind projects in the state, and there are at least 4 or 5 local bills floating through the legislature or have already passed. And it's already creating some level of uncertainty for the industry. They'd prefer to see a bill passed. But they're not going to see a bill passed that's literally written by them. There has to be some level of agreement as to what is best for Alabama.
Now, their argument was that the setback limits made basically the Shinbone and Nakalula, I guess it's pronounced, wind farms basically unbuildable because the guy, Steve Shaney, felt his property is just simply not big enough. Is that your understanding of it as well?
That's a farcical argument, in my opinion. That's them, once again, being alarmist because they don't want to be regulated. The reality is the bill, as written, as what passed the Senate, not only provides a setback, but it also provides them the opportunity to get a waiver from neighboring and adjacent landowners so that setbacks can actually be extended or, for that matter, even, you know, done away with if the neighboring property owners agree to it in writing. All it means is if Pioneer Green is going to build one, they're going to have to go through some level of accountability, act more responsible, and perhaps do a little bit more work to make sure they're not devaluing a neighbor's property in the course of pursuing their own project. So no, there's nothing in this bill that puts a, quote, moratorium on wind energy. It's just a simple matter of the fact that out-of-state companies that are coming here are trying to do so on their own agenda, and they don't want to be held accountable.
Now, they have said that these regulations go way above what they've seen in other states. Is that true?
That's not true either. I mean, I spent a year and a half studying this. I've got a 2-page list of the setbacks that are provided worldwide. I can tell you right now that multiple counties out west, and if you notice, by the way, when you study these, you'll find that the majority of the setbacks, which are the most extreme, are the ones who are going from experience. They've dealt with wind farms for a couple of years, and they come back and they make their setback provisions even tougher, which tells me that they've had experience that they lean on when they make it. There are a number of companies that are building across the U.S. who are dealing with setbacks that are tougher than even the ones we have here in Alabama. And there are countries like Australia, Denmark, even Great Britain, if I'm not mistaken, that have created setback provisions now that far and away exceed, sometimes double, even triple, what we're providing in this bill.
Now, I want to ask you about some of the amendments. As I know, when it started out, at least with the most recent initial offering of the bill, there was a decibel level of 40, and then that was changed to 50 as an average. And then you also changed the setback limits. Why did you sort of come back from, I guess, what was originally more of a stricter regulations? Why did you come back from that?
There was no coming back. What we did was we just deliberated. You know, the Senate being a deliberative body, we spent a lot of time working with groups on both sides of the issue, and we found the occasional middle ground. And so what we came up with was, you know, I think the last one that Pioneer Green asked for was 55. The adjacent property owners were saying, please don't go higher than 45 to 50. We came upon 50 as the one that we passed in the bill. So I think what you're looking at here really is just a matter of a bill that has been worked and worked and worked and literally has been a long and drawn-out process. And we have created what I think is a pretty deliberative and well-studied bill that's now ready for the House.
I tried to look this up, but I couldn't find any information. Why was one of the counties exempted from the bill?
Baldwin County had already passed legislation over a year ago that set in place some local guidelines for wind farms that we felt like we could not do away with their particular pre-existing legislation.
Baldwin County wasn't the county mentioned. It was...
Claiborne County was the one that came in towards the end also. And Claiborne had some special considerations, and I won't go into those on the interview. But the reality is they have a borderline or a border project that is looking to sell power to Georgia and is already pretty well along with the project. So in the end, in part of the discussions, that particular project wound up being exempted.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Wouldn't the guys from Pioneer Energy have an argument that it's not fair for one of the groups to be exempted when they're not?
I think Pioneer has to go back and look and see whether or not they're even welcome in this community. The reality is the project in Claiborne that you're speaking of, all of the local governing bodies in that area rallied around that project and saw it as something that they had already spent a great deal of time and investment on. In my area, Pioneer Green, and remember, we're looking at eight counties. It's not just the Pioneer Green project. There's eight counties right now in the proposed project. It's a statewide application here. But the Pioneer Green project also has, for the most part, with the exception of a few individual landowners, has zero support in the community, and SB 12 has been supported by the Cherokee County Commission, the Leesburg Town Council, and the Gadsden City Council. So I think you also have to look not only at the project itself, you have to also look at the community level of support.
Right. So I know you mentioned are they welcome. I mean, do you yourself consider Pioneer Green Energy as welcome? I mean, I know that's your district.
It is my district, and I was elected to represent my constituents. And I can tell you right now that within my district, there has been an uproar against this project. And the reality is you've also got two ongoing sources of litigation against Pioneer Green in our district. So the truth of the matter is the community here, as a majority, is not supporting that project. The reality is if they ever build a tower here, at the very least, there needs to be some regulations in place to protect our citizens, and that's what the goal of SB 12 is.
So the goal is not to stop them from building?
Absolutely not. The goal is to make sure that if they build, and it's an if, but if they build, that they have some level of accountability and that the citizens and communities in our area can know what to expect. I think if you look out west, and if you look out in Hawaii, you look out in Oklahoma, look out in Oregon, you're going to find examples of serious problems with wind farms where projects go bust and they abandon these million-dollar towers and the community cannot afford to take them back down. You also have issues like you can look at the Rutgers mechanical analysis study on ice throw and debris throw where blades come off or ice builds up and it slings bowling ball-sized chunks of ice for a quarter mile. I mean, there are considerations in place that have to be given their due in putting this legislation together. If Pioneer Green or any other wind developer does not want to be held accountable, then they probably shouldn't come here.
So one other argument that they made, actually there's two, and I'll just put them to you so you can respond to them. The first was that Steve Schoenfeld, one of the property owners, it's actually his property that they would be building on, at least one of the wind farms. And his argument is that you're basically taking away his right to do what he wants on his property. What would you say to that?
He's wrong. And that's again, one of the arguments that Pioneer Green wants to make. You know, when we enter into this bill, as an attorney, I understand that property owners have a right to the use and enjoyment of their property. That is the law. That's one of the underpinnings of our society. However, I'll go ahead and point out, too, there's an entire realm of the law called nuisance. If what you are doing with your property in some way inhibits the ability of your neighbor to the right to the use and enjoyment of theirs, then you've entered into a whole realm of the law that is actionable. If Mr. Schoenfeld or anyone else wants to lease their property, they can do so. But you can't build a power plant of any other type without the neighboring property owners knowing what their protections are. There is currently nothing you can build in this state, whether it be a house or a hospital or a power system or a coal plant or a coal mine or a hog farm for that matter, without there being some level of accountability in the law. And there's not right now for wind farms.
Well, it's interesting. You brought up coal plants, and another one of their arguments that I was going to point out was that they said that they believe, and I guess I'm not sure if this is correct. I haven't looked it up, but that coal plants or a coal mine can be like 300 feet away from somebody's property line, I guess, or a property, or 100 feet away from a property line, 300 feet away from somebody's property, which of course is a lot smaller than what the windmill calculation could end up being. What would you say to that?
Well, I think they need to go back and describe then how many times a coal mine towers over an adjacent property, or how many times a coal mine can sling ice for a quarter mile, or how many times a coal mine inhibits the flight path for a local rural airport, or for that matter, how many times a coal mine kills bald eagles, or how many times a coal mine is considered a something that can be seen through a tree line that borders the property line.
Well, could they make the argument that coal is a very dirty source of energy that's harming the planet?
You can make the same source about or same argument about wind. I mean, if you're going to go through the construction process of blasting into the rock to embed them 30 feet deep, and if you're going to wind up having a moratorium for 30 years on the killing of bald eagles because the Obama administration is promoting this agenda, or if you're going to wind up having towers that turn and potentially blades that separate and cause damage to adjacent property. I mean, everything we do has an impact. The question is whether or not you want to be accountable in terms of the impact you're bringing to bear. And again, Pioneer Green or any other wind energy provider needs to understand that Alabamians have to be protected in the face of their proposed projects. If they don't want to be held accountable, then they don't have positive intentions. They're just out to make money for themselves at the expense of whoever happens to be nearby. I'm intent on making sure that our folks are taken care of.
Now, I know you probably can't comment on the litigation against Pioneer Green, but what is your understanding of where that litigation is at right now, or do you know?
Yeah, I'm not involved in that at all. I know of it. And some of the people that, you know, that email me in support of the bill, of course, are either likely involved or at least tracking it. My understanding is that there's a group of adjacent property owners in both Etowah and then again in Cherokee counties that have filed for injunctive relief against the construction of the project, believing that it will have an adverse impact on their own property. So that's the extent of my knowledge, really, on where it is.
Now, how much support do you think you'll find in the House?
I think we're going to have a very positive support. There's a pretty much a groundswell right now, and it's not just from within the body. There's a great deal of positive grassroots support for this legislation that is, being made aware in the State House. So I feel like it's going to do quite well.